Welcome to the Wang Bennett's Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now, here's your host, Wang Bennett.
Welcome to Wang Bennett's Podcast. My name is Wang Bennett, and it's December the 29th, 2023. This is episode 125. Today we have a former Shady Spring wrestler and coach at Shady Spring Junior High and High School. And also he's a two times national motocross champion. And Mr. Danny Carter, welcome.
Well, thank you. It's GNCC champion, not motocross though.
It's not motocross?
No, I don't like the airtime. I do woods racing, off-road.
Okay.
Racing, wood racing,
yeah. Okay. I didn't know what exactly the name was.
A little different, yeah.
But you actually lived your early life in a Coal City area?
Yeah. And 76, what do you think we moved out to Shea? 76, 77, 77.
And did you play any sports when you were younger?
I played football for Coal City Colts, midget league football, youth football, I guess it's called now.
Uh-huh.
And then when I moved to Shady, didn't do anything until I was in junior high. Went out for wrestling a little bit in seventh grade and then stuck it out from eighth grade on. And that's about all I did was wrestle.
Now you, of course, living with two brothers, you do experience a little wrestling and fighting.
Yeah, well, from childhood, I mean, from birth on up, just about wrestling, because I was the middle child.
But your first experience with wrestling, it was when we had the very first county youth wrestling tournament.
Yes.
And Jerry Zaffaratus was a coach at Coal City.
Yeah, he was the traveling phys ed teacher for Raleigh County, I think. And he tried to put a team together we kind of thought it was a lead up more or less to get you into the YMCA, because YMCA had several teams.
Yeah.
And they were going to a state tournament or something. And they wanted a little tune-up tournament before they went, and we had around 60 or 80 kids that came out from Coal City Elementary, and we ended up winning the tournament, I think.
Yeah, as
a tournament team.
And I think that was the first experience the whole county had at any kind of youth wrestling, and I think we charged the kids 75 cents a piece to get in. I think maybe the school or somebody paid for it, but but they were coming out of the woodwork, man. We had kids from everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and there wasn't most of the kids that wrestled didn't know anything about wrestling, and whatever they seen on television was what they was trying to do. But it was fun, and it kind of gave us the idea that there was an interest in wrestling, and that's how the youth program got really going. It was just a lot of, I think when they first started the league, it had 300 or 400 kids in it, and it just got really good. But then you moved to Shady Spring, and you said you started wrestling about the eighth grade.
Yeah, that's when I stuck it out.
David Wills was the coach.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, see, I never coached against David. The year that I started at Park, he quit because he wanted to work on his master's or something.
Right.
And Greg Bonnell took over, I think,
yeah,
for a while. And I don't think Greg knew a lot about wrestling. He'd worked with kids, and he hung around in there for a few years.
Yeah, Coach Wills, he coached maybe 1 year with Dave, and then he handed it over to Bonnell, and he did it so the program would survive and keep going. After he gave it up, Coach Snuffer, Larry Snuffer, he was the assistant for Shady High School, and he was the coach for Shady Junior High. He did that at the same time until I got out of college in 91 when I graduated from WVU. I came back and he said, "Carter, you got to take this. I'm tired."
Well, I heard you made a statement one time, said Coach Snuffer would ask you to do something, Coach Manning would tell you.
Yeah.
So yeah, you was getting on both ends, I guess. But But Dix Manning was at the high school when you got there. But he had been coaching. He had been around for over 25 years. At that time, he started in the late 50s, and then he went through the 60s, quit for a couple years, and then come back. What kind of coach was he like? I mean, what was he like?
I've had several. I mean, I had a few coaches throughout my career. I wrestled a little bit at WVU, so I had two coaches there, Coach Snuffer and Dix, and Dave Wills, and many coaches through coaching. And Dix was just, he was different than any of them. He had his lineup. He would come in, he'd say, you're wrestling this, you're wrestling that, you're wrestling that. And he couldn't deviate from that once he picked his line. He said, this is what we can win with. And that was, he was all about the kids. He did everything he would haul kids for track meets and cross-country events. But wrestling was what he loved. He never wrestled. He went to wrestling camps back in the 50s and 60s with kids. He went every year to camp from the time I can remember. And he would just sit and watch. And he'd look down over his glasses and you'd see him and he wrote everything down, and he was just very technique oriented. And he would always, we didn't do a lot of strength work. He'd say, you know, all things being equal, strength will win, but we're going to have better technique. And he had a lot of success with that.
So. He was probably the first coach around that took kids to camp or went to camps. He was a pretty smart guy. First time I ever saw him, I walked into the gym, and I was in high school, and we were going to wrestle Shady. I wasn't wrestling that night. And he was all over in the chair, and he was all twisted up, and he bent over. And I actually thought, I said, man, that coach is crippled. They got that. But he wasn't. He was getting into the matches and working the holds over there in the chair. And then I had an opportunity to coach against him a little bit, but not too much when I was at the high school. One thing that a lot of people don't know about Dix, he was a heck of a bowler.
Yeah,
he was one of the best bowlers around.
He had several 300. You know, perfect games, 3,300 point games. He hit. We used to, before regionals, it was a kind of our tradition. His wife Lou would fix a spaghetti dinner the night before regionals, and that way coach could tell how much you ate, so you'd be sure to make weight on either Friday evening or Saturday morning, whenever, however it fell, with a 2-day or 1-day tournament. But he had bowling trophies. His entire basement was just full of bowling trophies. And I know there was at least two plaques for different times he had bowled a perfect game.
Yeah.
And he did league bowling here at Old Wick Lanes, I think it was. If he wasn't wrestling, watching some kind of sports on TV, he was at the bowling alley.
And he had over 300 and some wins, dual matches, and that's back when people didn't wrestle 60 dual matches a year or whatever. They only wrestled about 10 maybe or whatever. So 300 was a pretty extensive number. Now, in high school, you placed in the States a couple times, and Jeff Lester gave us a quote. He said that Danny was the perfect teammate. And he said, without him, I wouldn't have been a state champ. Said he was kind of like a big brother to us. And then also Larry Snuffer said, you know, Danny was one thing. He was one of the best technical wrestlers that Larry had ever been around. He said, you know, one thing that Danny could do that a lot of guys couldn't do, he could teach wrestling. Where you get a lot of good wrestlers out there that they know how to do it, but they can't show you how to do it. Those are great compliments. You won the regional championship your senior year. At that time, and this is again what people didn't wrestle as much as they do now, but you had set the record for career wins at Shady High School. How many was it back then? Do you remember?
When I set the record, was actually in, it was, I think it was the BNI, the Beckley Newspaper Invitational Finals. wrestled a kid from Woodrow and ended up beating him. That I think that gave me 86 wins.
Yeah.
Maybe it was 86 wins for this entire, I mean, for my entire career. I can't remember right off, but I know it was short-lived. Denny McMillan beat it the next year. He was a senior, and or it was just, maybe it was 2 years later. He won as a senior. He broke. Well, so he was like 96 or 97 wins, but we had more tournaments. And Jeff always used to give me a hard time. He said, because I always lose my first match. And he said, you had to wrestle back through consolation. That's where you got all your wins at. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
They, of course, now some of the, with the dual tournaments and everything, you know, some of those kids will wrestle 75 times a season. And yeah. I mean, I personally think they wrestle too much, but I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. Now, you graduated in 84, and then you went to WVU in 87.
Yeah.
What did you do in between?
I worked.
What did you work at?
Well, I was a torque technician for a while. I worked at, my first job was at a one-stop shop at the end of Raglan Road. I worked there, pump gas, cashier type thing. Then I went to work for Angle Repair Service as a torque technician. I did that for almost 2 years. And I met a girl who was fortunately smart enough for both of us. I had applied for college when I got out of high school. And I didn't have enough math credits. I only had Algebra 1. At that time, you had to have Algebra 1, Algebra 2, or Geometry. And fell through the cracks, they told me, when I came in, you know, at the end of the first semester. And so, well, see, you're not going to college. I said, no, I am. I wanted to go wrestle. And I talked to West Liberty a little bit. And said, well, you can't go. You don't have enough math credits. And of course, WVU turned me down when I applied to go there because I needed more math credits. And I went that summer to Beckley College and took math, algebra, college algebra, and got my requirements and got accepted to WVU. And that's like, I got my letter on Thursday, said, be here Saturday for orientation. Classes start Monday. And I looked at my mom, I said, I'll get a job. I ain't going to college. But I met, eventually became my wife. She filled out the application. She did everything for me, said, here, sign this. We're going to send this out. And that was in 87. And got accepted, went to WVU, and she went to Marshall.
And you tried out for wrestling, but you hadn't wrestled in 3 years.
Yeah, it was kind of tough. It was I met Coach Turnbull, and he was coaching at WVU at the time. He asked me what my goals were, and I said, "Well, just get my timing back and fit back in." I said, "You know, I haven't been on the mat competitively for 3 years. I'd been helping Shady. I'd go out whenever I had a day off or an evening, or if they did Saturday practices and worked with him, but." I was coming along with weight training was unique because I hadn't never had weight, you know, Coach Manning, we didn't do much weight training. So I did that, did the running season and then got midterms. I was like, I either got to go to school because I'm paying for it now or I got to wrestle. And I went and told Coach, I said, I might see you next year as a walk on again, but I had to let it go, get my grades up and, got that straightened out, and we got married that summer between my freshman and sophomore year of college, and she came to WVU, and I wrestled again that year, came back out, and Nate Carr was the assistant. He was a great guy to work to coach with and wrestle for and stuff. I made it through most of the season I went through the running season, the training season, all the preseason stuff. I had 4 lab classes a week, so Monday through Thursday, I was in class when everybody else was in practice. So I'd come over and catch the last 20 minutes of a practice or 30 minutes, and then other guys, there was 3 or 4 of them that also had lab classes and would miss practice. So we'd roll around and work out and stuff. I decided there was a week right before they had the WVU open. I decided I was going to blow off all of my lab classes and make practice every day. I thought I was going to die the third day. And actually it was a Thursday. I almost thought I did die. I didn't know what was going on because I was sitting in the mat room. I couldn't move. And Nate Carr came by and he was turning the lights off. And he seen me sitting in the floor by the door and said, you okay? I said, I'm not sure. I said, I was lightheaded and it was different things. And we talked a little bit. He got me up and we was walking around and I got dressed. I went home and made up the steps to my apartment. And I'd felt like this before, but never knew what it was. I always thought my sugar would drop or something. I cut a lot of weight in high school and I'd felt that a few times, but not like this. And I just looked at my wife. I said, I think I'm done wrestling. And I never went back. Of course, I didn't know until 1991 what it actually was. I had chronic AFib and still do. But I had an episode in 91. Nobody in Beckley had ever heard of it except they knew Ronald Reagan had had it. So I was a celebrity on the cardiac ward for a little while there. I mean, I was in my early 20s and here they couldn't explain what was going on happening to me. So they just kept saying, you have what? Ronald Reagan has. And I said, well, cool. What'd y'all do to fix him? I'm ready to get out of here.
Do you still take medicine for it or do you take medicine for it?
I do take medicine for it. Just, I got some doctors who are not real happy about my dirt bike racing, wrestling and that kind of stuff. Cause I'm on a blood thinner and I have it's a blood pressure pill. Basically keeps my highs from getting too high, my lows from getting too low.
Well, I mean, it's, luckily, you didn't discover another way. I mean,
yeah.
But because some people don't get that second chance. But you mentioned Nate Carr. And, of course, he's got a son wrestling now, David Carr, and who was a national champion last year and is ranked number one or two in the nation right now. And Nate is out there helping coach. I think he's at Iowa State. Nate come down – 1 year I had him down here for a clinic and great. And at that particular time, he was a physical specimen, man. I mean, that guy, he was something else, but he was, you know, he'd come down for a couple $100 or something. You know, yeah. I mean, guys don't try to get rich or anything. And, really, really nice guy. I was really impressed with him. So when you came back, it ended up taking over the Shady Junior High program. What kind of job? What did you get a degree in?
Well, I got a degree in agriculture education. I was going to be an ag teacher. I thought I started off in professional physical education. Thought because I wanted to be a coach. I basically went to college because I wanted to coach. I worked with the youth wrestling right out of high school. Coach Manning said, we need a program and you need to coach at Carter. And here's 35 kids I've got signed up. Here's the key to the mat room. And so I started coaching then. But when I came back, it was just natural. I mean, he said, we need a coach. And that's so I started 7 kids that first year, I think is all I had, a team of 7. Brandon Clark was on that team. He was my team captain. He was a 9th grader. He's my team captain, my assistant coach, and then the guy that taught me how to manage tournaments and stuff because I've never been on that spectrum of it. I've done it with the youth wrestling, but Brandon was a big, big help to me that year. And, of course, Coach Snuffer, he helped me. He said, you know, right, he told me about keeping records and different things like that because we had some coaches that would go and walk in the room. Well, yeah, I've got a kid, he's undefeated. And he'd have 4 losses sitting in the room. So that didn't go over real well at seating meetings. So worked on that. And I can't go watch it now. I mean, I haven't been to a match this year. I've been to 3 regional tournaments and 2 state tournaments, I think, since I've, quote unquote, retired in 2010, I guess. But I still stay real close to Coach Snuffer and I haul him. The regional tournaments I went to was with him and the state tournaments because he, at that time, he hadn't missed a state tournament since he started coaching back in, he was in the 70s with Dix. And he had some health problems and some snow. He don't like winter time. Or snow or cold. So it would be snow. And I took him to 2 state tournaments after I had retired. But
I try to watch as many as I can. I since the pandemic started, I I got on flow wrestling and track wrestling and all that stuff on the computer. And I've watched more college matches than I've ever seen in my life, you know, but because that's a lot that's on there. But the high schools and the junior high, middle schools, when I go out, it seems like the kids are in better shape. They know a lot more type. They wrestle more, but they're not fundamentally sound. It drives me crazy. You know, you're winning by a certain amount of points, and then you get up there high trying to turn a guy over when you don't need to be doing that. It just don't seem like they're as fundamental as they were in the past. And I think some of them could win a few more matches. Now, when you were coaching, when you were the head coach, Sonny Harrow won state championship when he was coaching. Yeah. But I know some of the guys I've talked to in the past, Anthony Harvey and people like that, they all mention you. You know, Coach Carter, you know, he worked with me and he did this and that. And so they all give you high regard. I did hear a funny story one time about you going to a seating meeting. You were so wrapped up in the seating, I guess, that you left your keys in the car. You remember that?
Yeah, I think that was at Braxton County, if I'm not mistaken. It's not far. We went. It was the high school seating meeting, and I think that's where it was at. I know we had some problems at Braxton too, but yeah, I've been locked out of the car. Coach Manning locked me out in Fairmont. I helped him take a crew of kids up. I was still coaching the junior high. There was canceled school. It was cold. I mean, it was below zero. And of course, coach said, don't answer the phone. We're traveling. And I helped him haul kids up to Fairmont and stayed in a motel. He come out and got my car, ready to go. And we had 45 minutes and we had to drive 5 minutes. So we were all kind of just started vehicles, letting them warm up. And I got to looking around and coach come in and he said, I'm riding with Jack. That's Jack Kincaid. And I was like, well, okay, coach. He said, your doors are locked. And he left. And I was like, my doors are locked. I went out, and sure enough, he was trying to roll his window down. He didn't see the hand crank, so he kept locking and unlocking the car door, and he locked it, shut the door, car's running, got another vehicle, and went to Fairmont. He went to the field house to wrestle and left me sitting there. I still had three kids to haul, and I'm locked out of my vehicle. So.
And it's running.
It's running, yeah. And it's 2 degrees. And it was 10, 15 below zero wind chills. And it was just, and we had done turned in keys. Luckily, I hadn't closed the door on my room, and I had to call wrecker service, and they come and took my license and $75, which is all the money I had. And got into the vehicle, then it was my dad's car, and got the license, got the insurance and all that stuff, had to verify that I owned the vehicle, and then they turned me loose. I still got there in time to get those three kids for weigh-ins, but I come out, I was like, coach, I said, why'd you lock me out? He said, I couldn't get the windows to go down.
So we were coming, David Shaw was coaching at Stratton Junior High, and they came up the park one time and wrestled, and I think it was a try. Somebody else was there, but anyway, after the match, we were talking, and he and I were walking. It was one nice, pleasant December or January day. We're walking out on the sidewalk in front of the park and talking about something, and all of a sudden, there goes his car up the road, and his manager was driving, and he goes, that's my car. And I said, who is that driving? He said, that's my manager. And what did he forgot? He gave his manager the keys to the car to take some stuff out to the car and put it in there. And his manager just couldn't pass it up. And luckily he didn't wreck it, you know, before they got him stopped, but he had to call the police and everything, I think. But I hadn't had that experience, but, you quit, coaching at the high school in 2010?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
And who took over after you left?
Jeff Lester and Larry Ransom. Larry's son was a freshman the last year that I coached. So I knew that Larry would be around for at least three more years. And he was an old Shady wrestler. He was third, I think, his senior year. Jeff, of course, we were teammates and co-captains together, wrestled all through. And he'd helped me a time or two. I tried to get him in with his jobs and stuff. He didn't really work, but he was never a paid assistant when I was at the junior high, but he helped me for off and on for two or three different years. There's some good stories I can tell you. We took him to Point Pleasant, and Jeff was always, he's just one of the kids. Most of the time, he wasn't really an assistant. He was a kid. So I had to coach him as much as anybody else. But he did a great job of teaching kids and working with those smaller guys. Anyway, I told him it's when Rainelle flooded. This was not the bad one, but it was pretty bad. And he was working for Beckley Newspapers, a circulation manager, and he had to go run all their routes because everybody called in, they wouldn't make their runs. And he was going to go to Point Pleasant. Well, I told him, I said, well, this time you got to be the bad guy. You know, these guys, kids look at you, I'm the bad guy. They, you know, just, I have to do the discipline stuff. It's all up to you. Well, he called me and said, I'm not going to be able to make it. And I was like, sure you're not, because you don't want to do this. Well, he did drive down. It was late. We were sleeping on the mats in the gym there at Point Pleasant. And I told the guys, I said, they kept coming asking me stuff. I said, Coach Lester, you talk to Coach Lester. They'd start getting out of hand, and I'd like, hey, Jeff. Oh. And he was jumping onto him. They didn't know how to take it, you know, and he didn't know how to do it either. So anyway, we were going through, and he was like, Carter, I got to go take a shower. You take care of the kids while I get. I said, yeah, I got them. So he headed to the locker room to take a shower. And I rounded up all my kids, part of Greenbrier, Eastern Greenbrier's kids, I think. There's like four different schools in the gym, and I was just passing out solo cups. And I said, guys, y'all go to the water fountain and fill these with cold water. What for? I said, don't ask questions, just go do it. And they did. And I probably shouldn't tell this on the air, but Jeff was in the shower, and he got about 60 or more solo cups of cold water out of the water cooler. And he took a nice cold shower. He was screaming. And the kids, I had a lot of those other teams' kids and stuff. They would come over, stay on our mat. We wrestled around till 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. We had a good time. It was a lot of fun.
A lot of people, we didn't have all the interstates and stuff. And even I remember taking a team down to St. Albans, and it was a 2-day tournament. And we went down on Friday night and we wrestled, and we stayed down there in the St. Albans Recreation Center and talked about sleeping on the floor. Everybody had sleeping bags and everything. And we didn't really get finished wrestling until about 11, 12 o'clock that night. And they didn't have Huntington and stuff at that time. But anyway, the next morning when we were trying to get everybody up and you got to go weigh in and stuff. And I'm they're all, you know, sleeping because they stayed up too late and can't get anybody up. Well, that recreation center happened to have a jukebox in the place. And I go over and put quarter in the jukebox and I turn that thing up as loud. The song was a song called Roller Coaster or something. It came on, and I mean, everybody's bouncing off the wall. And we didn't wrestle very good the next day, but I knew how to get them up. But I mean, people don't realize you didn't stay in hotels. I think some of the tournaments, they didn't have a lot of tournaments when I first started coaching. But some of the tournaments, you know, we would stay with families. You know, some of the kids would stay with families of the host team. But it was different. In the 90s, you had two kids of your own. Yeah. You had a boy and a girl?
Yes. Yeah. I have a son and a daughter.
What's your son's name?
Josh.
And your daughter?
Allie.
They were born in, what, 94, 97?
94 or 97. Josh was some of the local officials were they got to know him pretty good because they're always trying to run him out of the corner. So I finally had, my wife had a sweatshirt made that said Shady Junior in quotes coach, and I said, he don't have a coach's pass, but he's got a coach's shirt. So he'd sit on my knee and we you know, in the county tournaments and stuff around and home tournaments here, we'd wrestle. I always wanted him to wrestle. He went out for youth wrestling. They were practicing and everything down here. It was Mom's Mountain in the garage. They rolled the mat out and had used oil heaters and all that kind of stuff. And he had asthma, so that was detrimental. He couldn't do that. He played basketball and pretty good ball handler, but anybody ever watched Gent Elementary back in the 90s, they have three or four people that could handle the ball. And every one of them could shoot a ball and it would hit the rim and it would roll around the rim. And you could, the other teams, you could watch the people in the stands. They're like, oh, it's going to fall. It's going to fall. And it'd fall out. So they would, they'd score 4 or 5 points, you know. But we had one shooter, which was Josh's buddy. And when they would get the ball, his coach would yell, get the ball to Josh. And Josh would take it down the field. He'd say, give the ball to Noah. Because Noah could make a shot every now and then.
Josh didn't try to wrestle in middle school or anything?
Well, middle school, he didn't make the basketball team. And I said, well, you gave basketball 2 weeks. I said, I want you to give wrestling 2 weeks. Because we really didn't know what we were going to do with him because Michelle was teaching in elementary and he was going to be home by himself for an hour or so. So he went out for 2 weeks. He had a good time. He enjoyed it. He wrestled with Coach Wills' son, Cody. Cody was a year ahead of Josh, I think. So he made friends with Josh and kind of got him in there. And Matt Huffman was his coach and he knew Matt. We went to church together. So he was having fun and doing really well, but the flu was really bad that year, and he kept complaining of his stomach hurting, which we had a hard time keeping Josh in school. We didn't like school at all, but we started trying to get out of school, so we kept him on until almost Christmas time. I finally got him to a doctor, and he had H. pylori, which is an infection of the stomach lining, and they said, well, evidently when he had the flu, the infection moved to his stomach, and it's only one type of bacteria that will live in your stomach. So his stomach lining looked like bubble wrap. And we said, well, he complains of his belly hurting. He said, yeah, I'm sure it's very painful. Especially when sometimes it would hurt, sometimes it didn't when he would eat and things. So he quit then and he just never had an interest. He went hunting with his grandpa.
When you retired from wrestling, you like to hunt.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Especially a little bit deer and turkey and rabbit hunting.
I'm more of a rabbit hunter than anything. I deer hunt a little bit, but I like the still coaching, I guess. I don't know. I have 6 beagles, and those little suckers, they don't quit on you. They don't complain. They don't do anything. They're
eager to go.
They're always
looking forward to it. Yeah. But now, you got in a few years ago. Well, first of all, let's go back. When you were in high school, what kind of music did you listen to back then?
More or less, in high school, I didn't listen to very much at all. Whatever played on CIR.
Okay.
A little bit of rock, a little bit of country.
Any particular groups or anybody you like, or anybody you like now?
It's just kind of background noise. I'm not very...
A few years ago, you got into racing.
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about this.
Because
you were 50 years old then?
Well, I started back when I was probably in my 40s. Josh's senior year, a buddy of mine, Ron Cantley, and his son Stefan, it was Stefan's senior year, and he had a senior project, and he rebuilt a motorcycle. Friends of ours had given us a little 100, and Josh had about wore it out, and we were going to church with the Cantleys, and Stefan was wanting to sell the bike that he had just rebuilt and done for his senior project. So Josh, of course, wanted to buy it. His buddy had the same bike. So I ended up buying him the bike. And they immediately wanted to start racing. There was a little series over here at Burning Rock. And, of course, Ron was racing and Stefan were racing. So Josh and his buddy, I said, you guys are not ready for this. Oh, yeah, we are. Well, they went. We put him in a race, and the first race, Ron comes by, and he gives his thumb up, and he comes by another lap, and he said, he's okay, he's stuck on a hill, and he comes by another lap, and he thumbs up and just keeps going. And finally, here come Josh, And he come from a different direction. He said, I couldn't make this heel. And everybody else was just going on. He said, I just came back. So, okay. So we went to the second race. And here come, and his buddy won the first race. And second race, we're coming through. And I see his buddy and Ron and Stefan. And man, no Josh. And we're, you know, it's a 2-hour race. And we're about an hour, a little over an hour in. And still haven't seen him. And look, and oh, here he comes. He had wrecked and broke his front fender off. And I said, well, you're good to go. He said, yeah. I said, I'm all right. And I said, well, then why didn't you finish a lap? He said, well, you can't finish a lap without a fender. I said, you rode in here without one. And he said, well, you just don't realize how hard it is and all this. I said, I told you you wasn't ready to race. Because I rode dirt bikes when I was in junior high and high school. And he said, well, you need to get a bike and race with us. And my wife, I said, no, you don't want to do that, and I'm not going to get a bike. And she said, he's asking you to do something with him. I spent all my time coaching during his career or his college, or high school and junior high years, and he's wanting you to do something with him. So I said, okay. So I told him, if you can find me a bike just like yours for $2,500 or less, I'll buy it, and I'll race with you. I didn't think they'd ever find the bike. Trading Times came out that week on Tuesday, and on Thursday, I had a motorcycle. I told my wife, I said, you know what you're creating here. I made him go to the next race and watch because I told him we don't quit. And he didn't like that, but we watched. And then the next race, I had a bike and we went over and we were racing and he finished. Of course, he comes in. His buddy won the class, his class again. And they came in. I was like, where's Dad? Where's Dad? And she said, oh, he's still out on the track. They're like, all right, we beat him. We beat him. He says, he's on his fourth lap. They finished three. So.
Now, how this kind of racing, you do it in laps. And what is the normal distance for a lap? Is it different?
It depends on the courses. I race GNCC now, which is an AMA national tournament they have, or national schedule. They run 13 races a season. And they claim it's 8 to 15 mile laps. Most courses are around 12 miles. So
does everybody have the same size bike?
No, it's from 125. They have 125 class, 150 class. You ride 250s and 450s. There's two strokes and four strokes. They break them up some by motorcycle classes, but I race age divisions. So when my first national championship was on a 50 plus C class. So, you know, anybody 50 years and older, and they have A, B, and C classes. C are your novice up through top amateur. My buddy Ron, he was racing. He said, you ought to run a whole series. You can win this age, you know, your class in this division. And so in 2020, we decided me and him were going to do the whole circuit. And got three races in, COVID hit. Ron wasn't able to make any races, and I went ahead and did, I think I did 11 races that year and won the national championship. Couldn't win anything down south. I was second and third, and I couldn't wait to get those guys in the rocks, and then they didn't come up here. So the next year, I had to move up to the B class. I was 50B, and I ran that. You have to do 9 races to get points. I finished third that year in the 50 plus B class. And I thought, well, if I had a better bike, because I'm riding a 10 or 12 year old bike. And I said, I've never. So I was looking for a new bike and started off the next year. Well, no, I did get a bike that year. I bought a bike. And first time I rode it was Snowshoe, which is dubbed as the toughest race in America. It's kind of after the Blackwater 100. And it's a tough race. I think there's some tougher ones depending on weather conditions, but I really like Snowshoe. And I had ridden this new bike. I did the break-in on an hour and a half and changed the oil and took it to Snowshoe, wrecked it in the first half mile, got tied up with a guy, and watched my entire class go out of sight. And I said, well, this is what it's like to start dead last again. And then I watched another class start, two more start rows go by, and finally got to where I get back on my bike and took off, and I ran them down, finished third, which was probably, that was one of my best finishes that year, but I finished third overall, and then I got to move up a class. in age. So I was 56. I moved to the 55 plus, and I won. That's a Silver Masters B class. I won national championship in that in 22. Did 11 races. I did 12 races. I think I won nine out of 12.
When you race, do you race when you start? You race against people in your age group. They don't run everybody all together, and then.
Well, you start ever. They have. Right now, I'm in the A class, 55 plus A class, and I start on row 7. And there's 3 split rows, and I'm on a split row. So there's pro women, sportsman A, and they come on back through the A classes. So you start a minute apart. Women will start; they're the first one to go. Then the Masters A, I think, or Sportsman A is the second row to go, and they start 1 minute back, and then the next row is a minute back. So you keep going every minute, and you're racing overall. You're racing everybody out there. I could win the overall if I was fast enough, but it's on time adjustment. So when your class starts, they start the clock on your class, and it's a 2-hour race. And it can range from an hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours, that they cut it off at 2 hours or as close to 2 hours as they can for the amateur race. The pro race is an afternoon, and it's a 3-hour race. But so you go as hard as you can for as long as you can. And it's some of the courses are really open and fast. Most of the GNCC they have a lot of open. It's a little more than, I like single track. It's a little tighter. They race four-wheelers and motorcycles, and we're on the four-wheelers go on Saturday, motorcycles are on Sunday. So, you know, the course kind of blown out and opened up a little bit, but they still have a bikes-only section for us, and then they add another bikes-only section for the afternoon bikes. But
have you ever been hurt, injured in any races?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so after I won my national championship, I moved up to the B class, and I thought, you know, I got to make a show in here. And I left snow, went to South Carolina for the round one, and found out that those guys that start up front, they don't let you by when you yell at them. You got to pick a spot. Well, I had a hole. I've been trying to get by this guy forever. He was holding me up. I couldn't get around him. I found a spot. I came right up to him, and he moved off to the left, and I thought, well, he's making me a hole, and I went. And then he came right back in and T-boned me. We went down, got tied up. I hit hard on my ribs. I think I broke 3 ribs. Couldn't talk when I first got up, and I was trying to get out of the way so I didn't get ran over, because we were in it was pretty tight. And he was fussing and hollering, I can't believe you did. I was like, man, I've been yelling at you for a mile and a half. You moved over. I took a spot. I just want to get out of here. I said, well, are you okay? And he kept fussing and yelling. I was like, okay. I finally got my bike back up, and I got on and I took off. And that was about mile marker 4, and it was a 12-mile course. I finished that lap. I did one more, and I was coming in. I then moved back up to 4th place. And there was a little pond, and I knew from that pond we were camped was just a couple hundred yards away. And I said, well, I was on my last lap. I was going to get 3. And I said, well, I can do another lap and stay here, or I can bail out right here and go to the truck and drive home. Because I knew I couldn't do both. And I got back over to the vehicle and everything. They loaded my bike, my buddies and stuff. And got changed, got back in the truck, and I drove home. I didn't move. I didn't get out of the truck. It's like 4.5 hours, and I never moved. That's like, if I get out of this seat, I'll never get back into it. That was painful.
Do you do your own mechanical work?
Yeah, I can't. I'm my only sponsor, me and my wife. So anybody that's listening wants to pick up an old fat slow guy, I'm your guy. But yeah, I do. If it's engine work, I'll send it out. But I've had a cylinder replaced and a top end done once. I sent it off to have it done. But basic stuff. It's just me and Rocky Mountain.
How long are you going to keep doing this?
Well, I've got a really good friend I met in South Carolina. He didn't race this past year because he'd got hurt the year before. He won a national championship in the 70-plus class. And Jimmy is 77 this year. And I talked to him over Christmas a little bit, well, day before yesterday. And he's on an e-bike now. So he said he's not sure if he's going to do any dirt bike racing or not. So I can go till I'm 77 at least.
They don't have an 80 and over class.
Well, I mean, it's 70. It's 70 plus. So you can go right on up to.
Yeah, my buddy I go to church with, Harold Lilly. He plays in the 70 over softball league, or they play all over the country. And I played softball for years, and I said, "Man, I don't think I could run to first base. I'd have to walk if I did happen to get a hit." But well, it's great that training. You got anything on your bucket list besides? Besides, is there something out there that you haven't done that you'd really like to do?
Well, I don't know if they'll let me now. I'd like to do the afternoon pro race. They have a 40-plus class, and I don't know if they'll let me run the 40-plus or not because I'm well plus over 40. But I'd like to do that one time, and I would really like to do that at Snowshoe. They have a section at Snowshoe that it's usually pretty challenging, more so than for the amateur race. But if you can go out there and do three laps, I mean, I've run with the overall national champion pro guys. I've been on the same course with them and done stuff. And I'd like to run that one time. And probably more so than that, I'd like to go to Maine and do some snowshoe hare hunting. We have snowshoe hare in West Virginia. I used to have some buddies and we used to hunt here. There's not many. I've been to Michigan once. I went to Drummond Island with a buddy of mine. And snowshoe hare, they're rabbits, but they're different. It's kind of like the big game of small game.
I didn't even know they had them in Maine. I thought West Virginia was the only ones that had them.
We're the southernmost limit. They can survive here up in on Snowshoe Mountain, Cheat Mountain, that range up in there. But you have to have, over 3,800 feet elevation, 4,000 feet. You got to have snow cover because they're varying hair and they change colors with day length and temperature. And if there's no snow, they really stick out because they're big white animal and they're about 1.5 times the size of a cottontail rabbit we have here. So the challenge or the fun part about them, I'm in it for the dogs. I don't go kill. I like to hear the chase. And snowshoe hare, they normally, unless they're injured, they don't go to a hole. They don't go to some place. They rely on running and long hops, changing their direction to lose the dogs, lose their predators. If you injure them, they'll go into a hole or a log jam or something like that to get away. But it's a run. And
do they have a competition among Biggles, the same as they do coon dogs?
Yeah, I used to do some field trialing. Matt Huffman and I used to be licensed judges, and we did some judging, and I did that for about 10 years, made some really good friends. I guess I'm a competition junkie. I don't know. I like to compete and do stuff. That's how I won my national championships in the dirt bike racing, is too stubborn to quit, I won.
I think you put. I think you said one time, determination and persistence. If you get points for showing up, and then when you place, Danny, I appreciate you coming by and talking to us, and I've enjoyed that. I've also the time that you put in working with the youth and other people's kids.
Yeah.
That's quite a testimony. And anytime you want to come back, I'd love to have you.
Well, we'll see. I've got a girl that I go to church with, bought her a motorcycle this past year. She's been wanting to race and ride and stuff, so I'm trying to get her. So I might coach up. If she gets good, better than me, I can come back and say I coached her.
Well, actually, I had three motorcycles when I was younger. I had a Yamaha 250, I think, and 125, and they were all trail bikes, but I don't want to get in no races. Man, I don't even sit on one now. I almost got killed myself by myself, you know. But appreciate you coming. Anybody else out there that would like to be on the program, you just contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com, and we'll get you on here. And until next time, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. And God bless you.